A morning today's Daf and Sivus is Daf Nanala. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf. Daf is Lanzechen Nishmas, Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. We're Nun Amud Aleph, we're Tekanas Usha. And Bezin, after the destruction of Baisheni, got exiled and moved around from a number of locations, 10 locations in all. One of the places that they ended up situated is in a town of Usha. It's in the north. And there, a number of takanas, a number of rabbinic institutions that were made by Beis Din. Most of them have to do with finances. And the Gemara over here is using the opportunity to go through a number of takanas usha. Probably the most popular one is the one that we just went through in the Gemara. And that was not to spend more than a fifth of your income or asset. I'm not totally clear about that, but a fifth of your income or your assets on staka. As the Gemara points out a number of times, staka, of course, in a very important mitzvah, but at the same time, staka should not be the cause of your financial loss. So therefore, you should give tzedakah, and the Gemara in Tanna says that when you give tzedakah, you also can, there's a fair expectation, says the Gemara over there, that you'll become wealthy. But at the same time, though, all that's within a pragmatic standpoint. If you give more than 20% of your assets or your income away, so then the Gemara says you're going to be mitzarech lebrios, you're going to then become poor. And so Usha capped tzedakah at 20%. That is one of the Takanas Usha that we spoke about yesterday. We spoke about a number of the Takanas Usha, and that's one of them we spoke about. Gemara went off on another tangent yesterday, very interesting tangent, regarding putting pressure on your children in terms of learning. The Gemara says another one of the Takanas Usha is that as your son approaches the age of 12, so pressure should be applied in terms of learning. From 6 to 12, the Gemara says you should certainly present him with the idea of learning, but no pressure. But after 12 years of age, the Gemara says then you should assert some sort of pressure. That's another one of the Takanas Usha that we discussed. Admittedly, that one doesn't have to do with money, but the rest of them all have to do with some form of finance. Amar Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanin. Let's pick it up where we left off yesterday. We're on the bottom of Nun Amud Aleph, and the first word in the line is Debari, and we begin now with the words Amar Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanin. Continuing, so let's say a woman stores her nechsim alug. Now nechsim alug are properties that she retains as she goes into a marriage. Either A, she decided not to put that property into the ksuva, so that means that she still has title of that property, or B, she acquired that property after she got married. In either case, the property is hers, and the name of the title is hers. The only thing is, as we've been discussing the past couple of days, is that the husband has the right to the peiros. He can enjoy the fruits of that property. So what the husband has is what's called in halacha a kinyan peiros. He has an acquisition of the fruits of that property. So that does not make him the title holder. He is not the owner of the property. However, what they institute in Usha is that the fact that he has payros to the property gives him a certain claim to the property. And the Gemara now is going to explain. Let's say the wife sells a nechsim alug bechayabala while the husband's alive. Umesa. And she dies. Habal motzi miyana lekuchos. So now the husband can take the property and extract it from the lekuchos, meaning the husband can negate the sale. His rights to the fruit of that property entitle him to lay claim to the property. So there was a gathering and assembling of people in the town of Usha. Amalei man mar deshmaita de Usha. So who is the author of the statement that was made in Usha? Amalei Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina. So he says the author of that statement was Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina. So we saw that in the beginning of our sugya, but apparently that point wasn't clear to him. So he just simply identified it was Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina. Tani min ar ben zimna ver amalei kamanda bar chalebi kisasei. And so he went over it 40 times and chazered again and again until he had it down so that he knew that this halacha could be attributed to Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina. Okay, a little bit of agadita. I know we haven't seen much of it lately in the daf. The Gemara over here is just going to give us a little treat of agadita. Asher shami mishparosi tzedakah b'choleis. Somebody fortunate should be somebody who preserves justice and does tzedakah all the time. So v'chi eshal asot tzedakah b'choleis. Now, can you do tzedaka all the time? Meaning, we're talking about tzedaka, around the clock tzedaka. So, to give on occasion, that's fine. But how could someone do it all the time? So, either Yavne said it or Rabbi Elazar said it, but the Gemara gives an answer. Feeding your children when they're young. Feeding your children when they're young, meaning, again, up until the age of 6, a man is obligated to feed them. From 6 to 12, as we pointed out yesterday, he's not obligated, but mitzvah. There's a moral imperative. Okay, and aside from that, meaning, aside from there being a moral imperative, what also could you count it as? You can count it as sukkah. So that's an example where they're going to always want to eat. Daytime, nighttime, they're interested in eating. So the... So that's a satisfaction of the mitzvah of tzedakah.
That's part of the 10%.
Right? Can you count that towards your ma'aser k'safim? Okay, now you'll ask your local rav. But okay, the gemara makes it sound like that's the tzedakah. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman Amar Zeh Megadol Yosef Yisomer B'tzoch Beiso U'Masian. Gemara gives another example. Let's say you raise an orphan in your house. And you marry them off, so that's round the clock tzedakah. A similar idea, just another example where you're basically performing tzedakah 7/24. Hon ve'osha beveso tzedakah omer's lad. Another pasuk, the Gemara quotes in Tehillim, chapter 1:12. So wealth is in your house, and the tzedakah perpetuates forever. What does that mean? So what perpetuates forever? Let's say you learn Torah, and then after having learned the Torah, you then pass it on to others. You teach the Torah to others. So that's something which perpetuates forever. Gemara gives another example where you write for yourself a Torah, and Navi Ksuvim, in other words, one of the Sifrei Tanakh, and you lend it out. So you basically create a lending library. So that's great. So in other words, that you did a mitzvah, and also it perpetuates forever. The Gemara quotes another pasuk from Tehillim, right? Popularized by the song. So Amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi kevin shabanim levanecha shalma Yisrael. Once your children have children, so then shalma Yisrael, meaning grandchildren, create shalom. The loss of the chalitza v'yibum. But the Gemara, not to make this overly mushy and or emotional, why is grandchildren create shalom? Because now you know that there's not going to be, your children are not going to have to go through yibum and chalitza. Yibum and chalitza, we spent a significant amount of time learning about it in the previous Masechta, but it's uncomfortable. Meaning a shidduch that was created by a Kadosh Baruch Hu, which had no involvement of mankind. So it's you're gonna be stuck with somebody who you may not want to be stuck with. So knowing that your children now have grandchildren, so now they, you know that they're not going to be involved in the mitzvah of Yibam or Chalitza, Shalom Yisrael. That's one way to say it. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani Amar Kim Shabbanu Levanecha Shalom Al Dayane Yisrael. Once your children have grandchildren, then the Dayanim are at peace. Why? The loss of Lidya and Suya, because less fighting. Meaning that once you know that there's going to be a Yerusha going to your children, end up going to your grandchildren, and there's not going to be that much quibbling over the Yerusha, so the Dayanim are more at peace because they know there's not going to be that much fighting. Okay, now just a sliver of Agadata, and we head right back to the Gemara, to the Mishnah and the Gemara. Now you remember, where did we start? On Mem Tesamad Aleph, the Mishnah, got us involved in the discussion of supporting of the daughters. Meaning, father dies, leaves an estate, so the sons inherit the estate, but the daughters are going to get supported by that estate. That's part of the contractual agreement of Iksuva, that the daughters get supported by the estate. The Mishnah told us that it's akin to Yerusha. Meaning, just like by Yerusha, the sons get the Yerusha only after the father dies, so too when it comes to support of the daughter, the daughters only get support after the father dies. And remember, the Mishnah told us, in contradistinction to when he's alive. When he's alive, he's not obligated to support his daughters. Again, it's a mitzvah, and as the Gemara just got one over with us, he could file it maybe under tzedakah, but it's not an obligation for him to support his daughters. That's what we learned back in the Mishnah. And so what we're going to now understand much better is this comparison that the Mishnah made between Yerusha and supporting of the daughters. That's the Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah in the Mishnah said the two are comparable. How are the two comparable? That's what we're about to understand. So, top of Nun Amud Beis. Yosef, Rav Yosef, coming to Rav Amnuna, Yosef, Rav Amnuna, Kama, Kishim, Shein, Abanim, Yorshim, Elam, and Akarka, Kach, and Abanim, and Zonas, Elam, and Akarka. So, Rav Yosef, sitting in front of Rav Huna, who was sitting in front of... And Rav Hamnuna made the following statement. Just like the sons only inherit property, so too when the daughters get supported, they only get supported from the property of the estate and not from the movables of the estate. That's a statement that was made by Rav Hamnuna. So to wish, when he made that statement, the world went crazy. So... So Avash alei kulei ama. Literally, the world was started making a ruckus. Meaning that, what kind of statement was that? The shavik arahu di yarsi lebanah, the lo shavik le arah lo yarsi lebanah. What do you mean? Meaning that your children only inherit the real property that you leave over. The children don't inherit the movables. What do you think happens to movables when a person dies? Obviously, it goes to the children. It's part of the Yerusha. Well, in other words, what are you talking about? So Rav Yosef was there, he was listening to the shir, and Rav Yosef says, no, he's not talking about regular Yerusha. Of course the sons get all the estate, both movable and property. That's not what he meant. What he meant was Ksuvas ben Indichrin, which I'm about to explain. But before I do that, let's just finish the Gemara. So Amarle Mar de Gavarabahu Yadamai Kamina. Rav Amnuna said to Rav Yosef, "You're such a great man. You know exactly what I meant to say. That's it. You're right. That's what I meant. Of course." Okay, Ksuvas ben Indichrin. Let's spend a couple of minutes learning together about Ksuvas ben Indichrin, and it really will shed a much better understanding of the Mishnah. Meaning, after going through this, we're going to go back to the Mishnah and understand it hopefully a lot better. Meaning, what happened to the Mishnah? The Mishnah made a comparison between the support of the daughters from the estate and the Yerusha of the sons from the estate. And when you think about it, you say to yourself, or you should have said to yourself back in the Mishnah, what kind of comparison is that? Meaning when the father dies, so what happens to the estate? It gets passed on to the sons. That's the halach in the Torah. What does that have to do with the daughters getting support from the estate? The daughters getting support from the estate, that was an enactment that was done by the Chachamim. What did the two have to do with one another? Okay, that could be the way we're going to phrase the question. Okay, let's phrase the question that way. So what do the two have to do with one another? So now what the Gemara is telling us is, that's not what the Mishnah was talking about. The Mishnah was not talking about the regular Yerusha, because of course the sons get the estate. They get the real property, they get the movables, and that has nothing to do with the supporting of the daughter. When the Mishnah was talking about Yerusha, it was talking about the halacha ksuvas ben Indichrin. I think this is the first time we're going through this in the Masechta. It may be. We're going to go through this a number of times in the Masechta. And did it come up in Yavamos? I don't. Huh? Ben Indichrin? Probably.
It came up sometime before.
Probably did. Either way. Ksuvas ben Indichrin is as follows. Right, a woman goes into a marriage, and as we know, father gives her a dowry, right, sum of money, and makes her more attractive. More men are going to be interested in her, not just for her, but also she comes into the marriage with some money as well, if you will, a little investment capital into the marriage. But here's the problem. The father of the bride is going to be a little bit reluctant, knowing that he's going to be giving over a good sum of money to his daughter to get married, and then what's going to happen? If she predeceases him, so then that money goes to him. And then he has children, unless he has children from other wives as well. So what's going to happen now to the estate of the father of the wife, of the bride, is that his estate now is going to go into the hands of somebody else. It's going to give him pause to think about writing the check before going into the marriage. Chachamim realized that. The Chachamim said, I'll tell you what. He said to the father of the bride, we're going to make the following enactment, and that is that in the event that you write a dowry for your daughter, that money is only going to be transferred to your grandchildren, meaning to your daughter's children and not to any of the other children. And this falls under the category of what we call ksuvas ben indichrin. You actually write this into the ksuva, and it basically states as follows, that if your daughter has any sons and you write the dowry that you write in the ksuva is first going to be given to your grandchildren, and then and only then is the rest of the estate going to be divided by all the children of your son-in-law. Okay, that's the enactment of Ksuvas Menin Dichrin. Now, there's more details, and if you take a look at Rashi, there's a long Rashi over here on this Amud that gives more details about it. Ksuvas Menin Dichrin is only going to be exercised in the event that there's actually leftover estate to be divided amongst the children. Meaning that the Chachamim will not exercise Ksuvas Menin Dichrin if after the dowries get divided by the sons and there's no estate left over, so then they're not going to exercise Ksuvas Menin Dichrin. So there's more to discuss about this general enactment. But what is Ksuvas Menin Dichrin? It's a Takanas Chachamim. It's an enactment that was done by the Chachamim. And now what we're learning together is that Ksuvas Menin Dichrin is only going to be from Karka. It's only going to be from real property. It's not going to be from movables. So that means that when a man dies and he had, let's say, multiple wives, and he inherited the ksuva of these multiple wives, and now that he's dead, and now it's a question of division of his estate, so again, the first thing that gets portioned off are going to be the ksuva, the dowry ksuva, the value of the dowry that was written in each of the ksuvas, which are going to then be funneled down to the respective children of their mothers. The ksuva has been indifferent. So that's the first thing that's going to get divided. But what we're learning together now is that only is going to come out of the real portion of the estate. Not the movables, but rather the real estate. Now that we've said all this, now we go back to the Mishnah, and now hopefully we'll have a much better understanding of the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah says, you know, support for the daughter is just like the Yerusha of the sons. We're not talking about the regular Yerusha. We're talking about Ksuvas Benin Dichrin. And as a result of that, because we're talking about Ksuvas Benin Dichrin, it's one Takana compared to another Takana. And the sons get a Takana's Bezdin, otherwise known as the dowry of their late mother. And the daughters are going to get supported by the estate, another Takana of the Chachamim. Good. Now everything is better contextualized. Amar Rabbi Chia Bar Yosef Rav Zan. I'm sorry. And basically now, another thing that we also just discovered in the Gemara is that when the daughters get supported by the estate, they only get supported by the real property. Meaning, any movables in the estate cannot be applied towards the support of the daughters. Okay. Why should that be? Right? Sorry. Why should that be? So probably because of the idea of a shibud, meaning that there is a lien created against the estate of the father to support his daughters, but that lien is only created against real property and not immovables. And now for nearly the next Amud of Gemara, what you're going to see is that this turned into a major controversy, meaning, can the estate be used? Can the movable portion of an estate be used to support the daughters? So the Gemara just quoted a Rav Hamanuna saying no. And what we're going to see from this point going forward is this is open for a lot of debate. Amar Rabbi Chia Bar Yosef, Rav Zan Mechite de Alya. So Rav Chia Bar Yosef quoted Rav, and Rav supported the daughters using the wheat of the that was found up in the roof. In other words, there was wheat left over from the estate. He used that to support the daughters. Now the Gemara says, now wait a second. Rav can mean one of two things. Either he can mean that we're not talking about support, meaning food, so that the daughters can eat, but he's rather talking about a dowry. Now we know the halach is as follows. If there's a father, the father is going to write a dowry for his daughter so that she can get married. But what if there's no father? Meaning, God forbid, the father died, and now all that's left is an estate. So, can we use money from the estate to write a dowry for the daughter? The answer is yes. Moreover, you could use real property. Moreover, you could use movables, at least according to Rav. Moreover, what kind of dowry do you write? So the Gemara tells us, this is a halacha said over by Shmuel. We're going to see this a couple times this morning. Moreover, you write the dowry based on what dad would have done had dad been alive. Meaning, obviously we don't know, we're guessing, but guess based on the degree of generosity or frugalness of the father. If the father was a generous man, write her a good-sized dowry. If he was not, if he was frugal, if he was thrifty, so then write her a less than generous dowry. So that is one possibility of what Rav did. Meaning, Rav used the movable portion of the estate, not the real estate, but the movable portions, and he used it for a dowry for the daughter. Odilma, the Gemara says, that's one possibility. What's the second possibility? Mizone mamishava umay aliyah midvarim tov mishenem or baaliyah damar Rav Yitzchak by Yosef baaliyah hitkinish yubanos and zonos minametaltalim. Or the Gemara says, no, Rav actually took the movable portion of the estate in order to support the daughter, and this was based on a statement that was made in the aliyah in the second floor of Rav Yitzchak by Yosef, where there he institutionalized that the daughter should get supported, but he didn't institutionalize that. That already was an establishment. What he institutionalized is that they should get supported by the movable portions of the estate. Toshma. So Rabbi Barnai was a custodian. He was an apotropos over an estate, and there were movables. And he went to Shmuel, and he says, look, there are daughters here in this family. Can I feed them using the movables of the estate? And Shmuel's response was, yeah, sure. So my love la mazonah, because Rav Yitzchak by Yosef really. So the Gemara says, okay, and aren't we talking about mazonos? And aren't we going along the line, the thinking of Rav Yitzchak by Yosef, who we just quoted? Gemara says, lo, hasol parnasa havayu Shmuel atami dam Shmuel parnasa shemim ba'av. Gemara says, no, he wasn't, the custodian wasn't, asking about feeding the girls. He can't feed the girls with the real property, using the value of the real property, but rather he was talking about parnasa, meaning a dowry, and how much of a dowry was he writing based on whether the father was generous or cheap. Hava uvda ben arda v'don dina den arda v'don dina den arda. Gemara says there was an episode, there was an incident in Arda where somebody died, and there was an estate, and the custodian used movables to feed the daughters. And there was another incident in Pumpadisa, and Rav Chana Bar Bizna, in fact, collected using movables of the estate to support the daughters. Amla Rav Nachman, so Rav Nachman was not happy with the rulings of these rabbis. Zilu Ahadre. So he says, you go back and you reimburse the estate. In other words, he, Rav Nachman, told the judges, you guys, that was a miscarriage of justice, meaning you did not judge correctly. And we know that the halacha is that if a judge rules erroneously, so then he is obligated to reimburse, meaning that is considered malfeasance on the part of the judge, and the judge has to then reimburse. Rav Nachman says to him, you guys did a terrible job judging. You allowed money from the estate to be used to support the daughters, which again, good, but you can only use from real property. You cannot use the movables. You guys did that. You guys know that that's wrong. And so, if you don't make good, the ilo magbino la panaycho minaycho. And if you don't reimburse, so then what I'm going to do is I'm going to come and I'm going to take your houses and I'm going to use your houses. So I'm going to sell off your houses to pay off all the loss that you created for that estate. Okay, time and again we find that Rav Nachman is not shy, he's very forward, he's very direct, right, in other words, par for the course, what we generally know from Rav Nachman. Okay, Rabbi Ami v'Ravasi, several amizim and metaltele. Again, as I pointed out, the rest of this Amud is really dedicated to this, what turns into an unbelievably controversial discussion. Rabbi Ami v'Ravasi thought that they could support the daughters using the movables of the estate. Amalu Rabbi Yaakov v'Idi Milsad Rav Yochanan v'Reish Lakish lo'avdu buhu uvda. So he says, look, Rav Yochanan v'Reish Lakish, they never did it. Meaning we never heard them supporting a girls using the movables. Asan avdim behuvda, and you feel comfortable doing it? I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't take money from an orphaned estate to use to support the daughters. Now, again, I just want to demonstrate a certain amount of self-awareness. Meaning I know that the daughters are also orphans. Meaning they're also they also need to eat. But the Gemara says, but only the movable properties of the estate are leaned against this responsibility, and not the metaltalin. Rabbi Lazar Sava Lamezim and metaltalin. Rabbi Lazar also thought that he should support the daughters from the metaltalin. I'm the fun of Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim. Rabbi Yodea Nibach, she'en midas adina ta'ose, ela midas rachmanos. So he says, look, I know this is not the letter of the law. Meaning the law does not allow you to use movable properties of the estate in order to pay for the support of the daughter. And I know this is coming strictly out of rachmanos. This is not din. But he says, look, if you do this, if you exercise your judgment, now, again, Rav Nachman told the previous judges, not only shouldn't you do this, but you have no right to do this. So what gave him the right to do this if this is not din? And this is Rachmanis. What gives him the right to do that? I don't know the answer to that question. But anyway, but he says to him, look, you do this, and then later judges are going to watch you, and then you're obviously going to create a precedent, and people are going to think that you can use money from the estate, not just the movables, not just the real property, but even the movables to pay for the support of the daughters. So he says, don't do it. Let's just finish up. So a person came to Rav Yosef, again, same topic of discussion. So using estate money to pay for the support of the daughters. And he says, use the dates. There are dates that are lying on top of the mat. He says, and that was part of the estate. He says, go ahead, take the dates. So Amalei Abaye Ilu Bal Chov Hava Ki Aygav Nemi Avi Yosef Le Mar. So he says to him, what? You're going to do what? You're going to take the dates? The dates that were already cut off the property? So he says, let me tell you something. Even if a Baal Chov came, a Baal Chov is somebody, a creditor, who is actually entitled to get paid back, to get reimbursed. He can't take the cut dates. The reason why he can't do that is because only real property is mortgaged against the loan. And here, the cut dates are not real property. They're movables. And they don't serve as security against the loan. And the Baal Chov can't collect the cut dates. And you're going to take that away from the estate in order to pay for the daughters? That's also a chov. That's also an obligation. But the only thing that is backing that obligation is going to be the real property, not the dates that are cut off the tree. So Amar Lei Dechazi Lebuja Kamina. So Rav Yosef says, no, you misunderstood me. I didn't mean the dates that are already cut. I mean that they are still connected to the tree. Adayin mechubaris is still connected to the tree, says Rashi. So we're now on the very top of Nun Aleph and Aleph. So kala omer l'gzos k'gazos dami. Gemara says, yeah, but you know, we have a halachic principle. If these dates are ripe and ready to be cut off the tree, halachically we view them as if they're already cut off the tree. So in other words, those very ripe dates halachically are considered mitaltalin. It's not considered mechubla karka. And so therefore, those dates cannot be used to be applied against any type of obligation that the estate has. Not to pay off the Baal Chov, and not to pay support for the daughters. So the Gemara says, d'tzricha l'dikla kamina. Rav Yosef says, again, you're right about that as well. I'm not talking about the ripe dates, I'm talking about the dates that are not yet ripened, still need the sustenance of the tree, therefore still can consider connected to the ground and can be applied towards the obligation, and therefore they can be used in order to pay for the support of the daughters. Because it's not right. Meaning that the support of the daughters is a takana of the chachamim, but the only thing you can use are only land that is secured against that obligation.
Why not the
move? They're not secured. It's a chov. It's an obligation. Meaning, according to the strict letter of the law, the daughters don't have to get supported by the estate. The chachamim instituted that the daughters are going to get supported. But even that, even the institution of the chachamim, is only going to be backed and secured by the land. Only land secures an obligation.
The widow is the only one who benefits from
the talpa. Well, that also is coming up. That I'm not sure about. But that.
What else is
metalton
used for?
Well, again, it belongs to the children.
Oh, the children themselves.
Yeah, in other words, we're talking about the children inheriting the metaltalin. They get the metaltalin, and as far as any of the obligations of the father that they have to make good for, so that's right, that's only going to be secured by property.
So if somebody wants to get married, they have to have a land for the ketubah?
Meaning, no, you can...
an obligation too.
No, I understand that. No. You're talking about the dowry?
Yes. No.
The ksuba obligation from the husband to the wife,
right.
That's an obligation that's going to end up getting paid. Whether or not that ksuba obligation can be paid by movables, actually it's coming up also. That discussion as well. But in terms of what is going to be securing that, meaning there's a lien against this property, against that obligation.
Right.
Okay. Well. Okay. That's exactly correct. It's like any mortgage, and the bank collects from you for a defaulted loan. They're only collecting from land. Right, they're not taking your movable assets. Again, in American law, maybe different, but in other words, but from the halachic standpoint, it's only karka that creates the security. Let's go on. How yasam yasam adasul lekamadirava? We're on the very top of Nun Alpha Min Aleph. There was a orphan son and daughter, and they go in front of Rava. I'm a little Rava. Hello, yasam bishvil yasama. So Rava says, look, he was in a bit of a bind. In other words, he wanted to give food to the daughter. The problem is that the estate had no property, and so he didn't have any money in the estate. So Rava came up with an idea. Rava says, "Here's what I'll do. Let's give a little bit of extra estate to the son." He told the custodian. He told the apotropos, "You give a little bit of extra estate to the son, and use that to feed the daughter." Okay, good idea. We'll see. So Amar le Rabban le Rava. So the Chachamim said to Rava, they were critical, and they said, "V'hamar hu damar mimikarkel v'lamatalta." What are you doing? In other words, what difference does it make? You're giving the son a little bit of extra of the estate so that he can feed the daughter. Ultimately, you know what you're doing. You're feeding the daughter using the estate. And again, you can only use karka. You can't use movables. So they turned to Rava and they said, "What just happened over here? How did you solve the problem?" So Bein Lamazon, I'm sorry, V'lam Ematato, Bein Lamazon, Bein Laksuva, Bein Laparnasa. And this halacha goes all the way across the board. Mizonos, Ksuva, Parnasa. That can only be used from the estate, but only from the real estate, not the movable. So, Rava, what are you doing? So Amar Lahu, Ila Ratz Shivcha L'Shamsho, Milo Yavina Le. So Rava says, no, I'm right in this case. Look, the son gets supported by the estate. Right now the son's young. So that's why there's a custodian appointed. But basically, let's say the son wants not only food, but he wants an attendant, meaning he wants somebody to serve him. So, again, all at the discretion of the custodian and how much money's in the estate, but he wants an attendant, and let's assume that the estate can afford it. So fine, so you'll get him an attendant as well. So, in this case, Rava says, you know what I'll call the attendant? His sister. In other words, so koshikin hachadika tarte. So over here, in other words, you would have given him money anyway for an attendant, so let his sister serve him. And that way, I'll be able to take some of the estate and end up feeding the daughter. So it was a creative way on Rava's part to figure out a way to get money to the girl. There was no real property to be used for it. He figured out a way to use some of the movables. Let's go on. Tan Rabbanan. Echen achasim sheish lamechares ve'echen achasim shein lamechares motzin lamazon isha ulabanos divrei Rebbe. So Rebbe's of the opinion that when you have an estate, whether we're talking about real property, that is what's called nechasim sheish lamechares, or nechasim that do not have achrayus. That's another expression for movables. So that could be used for mazon isha and banos, for the support of the wife and support of the daughters. That is Rebbe's opinion. So it's interesting. Everyone keep in mind, I mean, Rav Nachman just 10 minutes ago in the daf said that to the judges who said that you could use movables, don't you dare. He says that is not acceptable. And meanwhile, it's interesting because now we're seeing a braisa, and we're seeing that Rebbe did allow it. But as we're going to see in just a moment, the halacha doesn't go like Rebbe, meaning it is Rebbe's position is going to be candidly rejected. So, but it is interesting that it's not nobody who takes this position, but still, it's not an accepted position. So, real property. So, is taken for the daughters from the sons, meaning that if there's real property, and even though the sons are going to inherit the property, but if the daughters need to eat, so obviously you're going to take from the real property to support the daughters. Ulabanos menabanos, ulabanim menabanim. The way Rashi explains this line of the Braisa, Rashi says, let's say that there are old sons and young sons who are now dividing the estate. The older sons are being a bit of a bully, or the older daughters are being a bit of a bully, meaning there are older daughters and younger daughters, and there are no sons. Either case, meaning that the older children are being a bit of a bully, and they're taking more of the estate for themselves. So Beis Din is going to come in and Beis Din is going to intervene and they're going to say, that's not how it works. Yerusha is an equitable distribution of the estate for all the for all the children. Okay, that's how Rashi explains that line. And if there's a large estate, so and their sons and daughters, so the sons get the estate, not the daughters. However, if it's a small estate, and we know that what the Chachamim did is they interceded on behalf of the daughters. If it's a small estate, the Chachamim said to the children, look, there's not enough estate for sons and daughters, and so triage. And therefore, only the daughters are going to be collecting the estate, and not the sons. And the sons are going to have to go begging door to door.
Including the Taltalim?
Huh?
Including the Taltalim?
No, that's only from the real property. Aval nechasim, I'm sorry. Lo labanim min abanos, min nechasim oatim. Nechasim she'en lamachrayas, matzim labanim min abanim. O labanos min abanos, o labanim min abanos, aval lo labanos min abanim. But if it is nechasim she'en lamachrayas, if it's movables, so then equitable distribution for all sons, equitable distribution if it's all daughters, banim and habanos, the daughters do not get supported from this from the movables. Avalola banos men habanim. Okay. Now, Alpha gav de kamelan halachik Rabbi Mechavero. Now, it's true that in general. So, what did we just see in this brisa? A machlokus between Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, in terms of whether or not daughters can get supported by movable items. Rabbi said yes. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar said no. And in general, the Gemara notes that we follow the halacha like Rabbi. Alpha gav de kamelan halachik Rabbi Mechavero hacha. Halacha k'Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, but over here the halacha falls like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Damar Rava, hilchasami mekarka v'al metaltele. Rava says that the halacha is karka not metaltel, and that's true for ksuva, mizonos, and parnasa. Meaning in the three areas where collection is going to be made by the estate, collection of the ksuva for the widow, collection of the support of the daughters from the estate, collection for the dowry of the daughters from the estate. So all these three collections can only be done from property, not from movables. That, the Gemara says, is the conclusion. Although the truth of the matter is, in terms of halacha, the story doesn't end there. The story goes on. Take a look at the second Tosos over here. Second Tosos points out, nowadays, says Tosos, we collect from movables. Even though, right? So even though the Gemara's conclusion is that for all these collections of a from an estate, you can only collect from karka. We saw that from Rava. It was a conclusion of the Gemara. Tosfos says we end up collecting from movables. You want to see the second Tosfos? I'm just going to skip right to the end where he says Venira. De bizman hazeh, it's like the last five lines of the second Tosfos. Venira. De bizman hazeh de kulu gabim metaltle ksuvos umizonos mitzakanos ha-gaonim. So it was an institution that was made by the Gaonim. Okay, we don't hear much of the Gaonim, meaning the Gemara was finished editing somewhere around the 5th, 6th century. And then, up until basically the Rambam, so there's a large period of Jewish history, we call that the period of the Gaonim. Okay, the Gaonim, we don't have much in terms of the writings of the Gaonim. But what we do have, however, is a couple of rulings of the Gaonim. So some of them to me are, you know, quote-unquote popular, but what some of the rulings of the Gaonim, here we have one. The Gaonim overruled the Gemara, and the Gaonim said that that these collections can be done even for movables as well. How do they do that? Huh?
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's interesting. How do they do that? How do they circumvent what was a very clear conclusion of the Gemara? So he goes on to write. Venir de bezman is the dekulo gabim de metaltik suva mezonos mitakanos agaonim upernas anami anaf sadish shekol bnei adam regilim lahasi benosem mi metaltele v'chashiv kamo beumdena de pasuk rava k'rav Yehuda. So Tosfos says because nowadays real estate is not employed as much as movables, meaning the currency, and I mean that both literally and figuratively, meaning currency, that which is our current currency, is much more metalton than it is karka, than it is movables. So if what ends up happening is that we use only the property for these obligations, so what's going to end up happening is that nobody's going to get supported. Daughters are not going to get supported. So in other words, from the Gemara standpoint, it was much easier to simply limit these obligations to the property. First of all, that's the shibud. Shibud is only created against real property. And secondly, people have property. But Tosu says that nowadays, if that were to be the case, then nobody would be collecting anything. People didn't have a lot of property. And so therefore, Tosu says the Gaonim already came along and they said that these obligations can be paid even for movable. So just an interesting addendum to the Gemara. Very interesting. And Tosu says this goes all the way back to the Gaonim. Okay, Mishnah. We are on Nun Aleph Amud Aleph. We are now starting the next Mishnah. Lo kazal laksuva besula gover masayim va'amana mana mimneshu tanai beizdin. This Mishnah over here, critical Mishnah in terms of the idea that a ksuva is a contractual obligation which may not need a contract. I'll say that again. A ksuva is a contractual obligation that may not need a contract. In other words, there are certain assumptions made that go into a ksuva that exist even if not written. So, for example, we know that there is a settlement at the end, at the termination of marriage. If either death or divorce are to occur, so she gets a settlement payment. It's generally speaking what we mean when we say the word tsuva. So, let's say in this document, it wasn't written, she got married as a basula. No disagreement. But we didn't write the number 200 in the ksuva. She gets 200. Let's say she was not a basula. Let's say she was a ba'ula. And 100 wasn't written in the document. She gets 100. Meaning this is part of the assumed contract of a ksuva. And even though it was not written, ki'il was as if it was written. Let's say the husband, when he marries his basula wife, so he points to a land and he says, look, this land is worth 100 zuz. I'm running this parcel of land into the ksuva. This land is going to secure your ksuva. That's wonderful, but the land is only worth 100. Her ksuva is 200. So the Mishnah says, she is going to have a lien against all of his properties. Even though in the ksuva he only secured one parcel of land that was only worth 100. Once again, that's part of Tanai Beisdin, that all of his properties are going to be used to secure the ksuva obligation. Let's say he doesn't write the following clause in the ksuva. If you get captured, I'm going to ransom you. He doesn't write that in the ksuva. He is obligated to do that, nevertheless. Once again, that's part of the contractual agreement of a ksuva, even if not written in. Or let's say he's a kohen, and obviously his wife now is an Ashes kohen. Now, unfortunately, after she's captured, we've learned this already a number of times, so she does not come back to him, but he still has an obligation to ransom her, and he's going to ransom her, and bring her back to her house. If he doesn't write that in the ksuva, it does not matter. That's part of the ksuva. That is a contractual obligation chayev. Shu tanai beizdin, because the Mishnah again repeats, that's part of tanai beizdin. Nishbeis chayev levdosa. If she's captured, he has to redeem her. He has to ransom her. V'imama haregi teksuva savitipa deyesatzma in rashai. But let's say the following. Let's say they're asking for a lot of money. And right now, he's not exactly in a position where he can afford it, or I don't even have to construct such a scenario. Let's say he's not interested, meaning he doesn't want to bother. So he says to her as follows, here's what I'll do. And I know this is heartless. That's an obvious point. But let's say what he does is he wants to write her a get, deliver the get, and now I have to pay you the settlement of the 200, the 100? Fine, he writes a check for that as well. The Mishnah says he cannot do that. He does not have the permission to do that because he's contractually obligated by the ksuva to redeem her, to ransom her. So he cannot bail out of the marriage at that point in time. He has to ransom her. That's part of the contractual obligation. Laksa chayv l'rufosa. Now, let's say she gets ill and the medical bills are piling up. So Amar haregita ksuvasa tirape tatzma rishai. So the Mishnah says here, under these circumstances, if he wants to, so he can write her a get, write her the ksuva settlement, and he can terminate the marriage. He is not ksuva contractually obligated to pay for her medical bills. Rashi writes at the end, Chayev l'refosa, sherefua kemizonos. Meaning, what category is refuah? meaning a husband pays for his wife's medical bills. Meaning, based on what we've seen up until now in the Masechta, how do you file that under? Meaning, what kind of obligation is that? Meaning, I know we have this idea of marriage being, you know, and I'll take care of you. But again, right. But right, exactly, that's the answer. But again, what does the halacha, how does the halacha compartmentalize, how does it categorize refuah? The answer is, says Rashi, mizonos. It falls under the category of mizonos. Meaning, he has to feed her, and included in that is, also, he's got to, if she's ill, she's sick, he's got to bring her back to health. Meaning, the idea of eating is, you're brought to health. So, including that is refuah as well. So, if he wants to, says the Mishnah, let's say she's ill and the doctor bills are piling up, so he can write her a get. And obviously, with that get, he's going to write her the ksuva. But in other words, he can bow out from that. If he would like to, the Rambam writes. I'm sure everyone feels. In other words, it's an intuitive point. The Rambam writes it. That's it's not right. Meaning, it's one of those areas of halacha where the Mishnah is telling us what he could do. Meaning, he is not contractually obligated to keep paying the medical bills. But and if he wants to, he can bow out of the marriage.
Should refer him to give him the 200. And get
right.
Out of the marriage. And
correct. He can do that. But the Rambam writes, however, that just it's not right. It's not morally correct to do so. But the Mishnah is telling us what was an option for him halachically. Money. The Gemara wants to know who is the author of our Mishnah, Rabbi Meir. Damar Kolapo Cheis LeBesul MiMasayim Olmana Mana Hare ZeBiIlas Znus. The author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that a woman, in order for the marriage to be a valid marriage, the woman must be holding her ksuva at full value. If a woman is holding either, if she's not holding a ksuva at all, or even if she is holding a ksuva but it's not at full value, Rabbi Meir says that is not marriage. The husband and wife being intimate with one another, be'ilas nus, lascivious behavior. Right, Rabbi Meir, huh?
What does that mean? What full value? What does that mean?
And let's say, for example, I'm using this example because it's coming up in just a moment. Let's say she writes to the husband a receipt. You know what? I'm going to waive a little bit of the ksuva. Yeah, right? You know, you've been nice to me. Right? Yeah, okay. I'll wait. Reb Meir says that's absolutely unacceptable. Meaning that they cannot be together as husband and wife if she's not holding a ksuva at its full value. So kol apoches lebesulah memasayim lamana mimana reza bilas nos dei Rabbi Yehuda amar rotsa kosev lebesulah shtar shal masayim vehi kosev iskapi mimech mana ulamana mana vehi ksuva itkapach mimech hamishim zos. So because we know that according to Rabbi Yehuda, she doesn't have to hold the ksuva at its full value. So what the Gemara now is suggesting is that our Mishnah is going like Rav Meir, not like Rav Yehuda. Because what did our Mishnah say? Our Mishnah says that if he identifies a piece of property worth 100 against a ksuva, so the Mishnah says that all of his properties are used against security against the ksuva. So it sounds like the author of our Mishnah is like Rabbi Meir. Fine. Ema Seifa. And by the way, I didn't make this point clear. Let me clarify. According to Rav Yehuda, if she writes a receipt that she got 100 zuz, meaning a besula, Rashi points out, even if she didn't get 100 zuz, meaning she's just simply waiving half of the ksuva. For whatever reason she wanted to do that, according to Rav Yehuda, that's fine. According to Rav Meir, that's unacceptable. Ema Seifa, so good. So we've identified the first half of the Mishnah to go like Rabbi Meir. The Gemara says, but then there's a second half of our Mishnah. What did that say? Kasev la sada shaveh manatachas masayim zuz v'lo kasev la kol nechas and dislach rein l'ksuv aseh chayev shu tanai beizdin asal la Rabbi Yehuda damar achrayis to asal for who? Gemara says like this. Let's say you write a contractual obligation of a loan. And in the contract it does not say that all my properties are going to be mortgaged against this loan. According to Rabbi Yehuda, that is not the fault of the malva. It's not the fault of the lova. That is the sofer's mistake. We assume that that's the sofer's mistake. And consequently, all your properties are mortgaged against that loan. That's Rav Yehuda's opinion. Our Mishnah is subscribing to that viewpoint. Because our Mishnah says that all the properties are going to be used against the security against that loan. D. Rabbi Meir, Almer Achrayas Laftaot Sofer, who did none. We know that according to Rav Meir, if you don't write that the lands are going to be used as mortgaged against the loan, Rav Yehuda says that that's not the fault of the sofer. The malva actually intended to omit that from the contract. That's Rav Meir's viewpoint. So that means then that part of the Mishnah is not going like Rav Meir. How do we know that Rav Meir holds that? Because of a Mishnah that we will learn together in Bava Metzia. Matzah Shtari Chov. Let's say I find a contract on the floor. Yesh Bama Achrayis Nechasim. And in this contract there's Achrayis Nechasim Lo Yachzir. Don't return the contract back to its original owner. Shebeis Din Nifrai Mehen. Because, as Rashi explains, as we're going to see together in Bava Metzia, you hand a loan document back to its original owner, it could very well be that the loan was already paid up. And what the lender and borrower are going to do with each other is have a little bit of a collusion. And they're going to say to one another, look, we know that the loan was already paid up, but let's do the following. I'm going to go to court. I'm going to demand this loan from you. You're going to claim poverty. You'll default on that. And you know what I'm going to get to do? I'm going to get to one of the lekuchos, and we're going to collect the land from the lekuchos, and then we'll split the land. So the Mishnah Bava Metzia says that's why you cannot give this document back to the lender. Based on the front man in by machrais nechasim. However, if there is no clause in the contract that allows collection from a buyer, Yachzer Shem Beis Din Ephraim Mehem, Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says, fine, then you can return it to the Malveh. Because, in other words, there's not going to be collusion over here. They can't collect a land using this document. And according to the Chachamim, no. Meaning, because every contract is collectible. You can use it to collect a property that was sold off. So that means then that there's always a concern of collusion. So, Reisha Rameh V'Sefer Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says so, and we'll end over here on this point. So now the Mishnah seems to be inconsistent. In that, the first half of the Mishnah sounds to be going like Rabbi Meir, who says that Eksuva, less than 200, is simply unacceptable. Rabbi Yehuda would be fine with it. Rabbi Meir says no. So our first half is going like Rabbi Meir. And meanwhile, the Mishnah also says that even if you don't write Achrayus in the document, it's still secured by all properties. That's going like Rabbi Yehuda, not like Rabbi Meir. And so what we have is an inconsistency in the Mishnah. Tomorrow we're going to explore possible solutions.